عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. صلى الله وسلم عليك يا سيدي ويا مولاي يا رسول الله، صلى الله وسلم عليك يا سيدي ويا مولاي يا أبا عبد الله، يا غريب يا مظلوم يا شهيد كربلاء، يا ليتنا كنا معكم سادتي فنفوز فوزا عظيما. اللهم صل. قال الله تعالى في محكم كتابه الكريم: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا وإن الله لمع المحسنين. God states in the Holy Quran, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: And as for those who strive for us, for God, and as for those who strive for us, we shall surely guide them in our ways. Truly God is with the virtuous. آمنا بالله صدق الله العلي العظيم. Once again, let us enliven and enlighten our hearts, our minds, our gathering with the remembrance of the Holy Prophet and his purified progeny. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل. For many, over the course of Islamic history, the legacy of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is seen as one of resistance to injustice and oppression, as well as one of activism, with the objective of reforming individuals and society towards that which is better. And thus, resistance, activism in the name of Imam Hussein are higher values and principles that the Imam and his movement represent in Islam. Now, the questions that come up for many of us today in the 21st century are the following. One is, how do we draw inspiration from Imam Hussein alayhi salam today in a time and place that is in some ways similar to the time and place of Imam Hussein, but in many ways different than the Imam's time and place and context? Two, can Imam Hussein's values, the principles that he represents, the lessons that he represents, can they be employed for those who seek activism today? And three, how do we introduce Imam Hussein and the values that he represents, either directly or indirectly? How do we introduce them to society today? And so tonight, I'd like to spend our time together, inshallah, by introducing four elements of what I call Husseini activism today. Four principles, four areas, or four elements in which the life legacy and the lessons, the values and the principles of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his mission can be utilized, can be employed in our lives and in our society today. The first of these elements is what I refer to as organization building. If we compare the structures of the religious organizations back home, where many of us came from, where we consider to be our homes, where we were born and raised, and where we migrated from, if we were to compare the religious organizations and the institutions of those countries, those places, to religious organizations and institutions here, in our home here, we find that there are some fundamental differences. Despite some similarities, there are some fundamental differences in their structures, in their missions, in their visions, in their objectives, and in their activities. So, for instance, when we look at one of the most important and perhaps the fundamental religious institution or organization back home in Muslim-majority countries, that organization is perhaps the mosque, the masjid, or the Husseiniya. It is in this institution, in this organization, that most of, if not all of, what we call the religious activities, they take place. And so the masjid, the mosque, or the Husseiniya is restricted, is simply one that is a place of worship and or learning. When we want to conduct our acts of worship in congregation together, we go to the masjid, right? We spend time at the masjid. Many people, in fact, they perform all of their daily prayers at the masjid. I remember when I was in Qom, and some of you probably remember this from different places that you lived in, that there were many different masjids locally in every kind of neighborhood. There is a masjid. Some are larger, some are smaller. And some people, I remember that some of my own neighbors, they would go to the masjid for the 5 daily prayers. Every prayer they would go and they perform the congregational prayers at the masjid. The ritual acts, the acts of worship are performed at the masjid. It's a place of worship. Much of the religious education for those who are young and those who are older occurs at the place of worship, the masjid or the Husseiniya. The religious lectures, the events that are held in the holy months of Muharram, Safar, the month of Ramadan, and the various occasions across throughout the year are usually held at this venue, at the masjid or at a Husseiniya, where people not only worship, but they are also educated. They receive their education, their religious education. When we come here, we find that the major feature of the general religious organization or religious institution is one that has a far more expansive role than simply being a place of worship or a place of religious education. One that is focused in large part on community building. Not just ritual, not just worship, not just religious education, but on community building. And this is why, if we take, for instance, the example of Christianity, or if you take the example specifically of Catholicism, you find that here in the United States and elsewhere in the world, that the Catholic Church is not just one, its functions are not just restricted to what goes on in the church, the building of the church itself. That its activities, they expand to community building. to the establishment of hospitals, for instance. I read recently an astonishing statistic that tells us that the Catholic Church across the world, across the globe, it manages up to 25% of the global healthcare institutions. Thousands of clinics. If I recall correctly the number, if I recall it, 18,000 clinics. Over 5,500 hospitals that are managed, that have been established by the Catholic Church. We go to all of the different schools that have been established, elementary schools, primary schools, high schools, universities, colleges. In fact, many of the universities and the colleges here, if we look at the United States, if you go and you read about their history, you find that they developed, they sprang out of a religious institution. Many of them were religious institutions of education. And then some of them, they continued that legacy. Others then became secular. But if you go back to some of the major institutions of higher education, colleges and universities, you find that they were established as a religious organization, as a religious institution. Many of the charities, the prominent charities, locally, nationally, internationally, are extensions of the Catholic Church and other religious organizations, other religious traditions. And so here, the religious organization or institution has a much more expansive role and influence that goes beyond the corners of the place of worship itself and what goes on in the place of worship. Many today, brothers and sisters, within the Muslim community, we find that many today are satisfied with the status quo. They're satisfied with thinking locally. They're satisfied with what they have produced in terms of the number of Islamic centers and mosques across the nation, and the programs that are restricted to them. Even if the mosque is active, even if the mosque has almost daily events, daily prayers, other programs that are associated with it, many people are happy, they are comforted, they are satisfied with this amount. They consider the mosque to be restricted in its objective to acts of worship, to conducting ritual acts, acts of worship, or some educational events. And so they are confined locally. And it's important for us, brothers and sisters, as a Muslim community, that we expand our thinking, we move beyond just the local level. We move beyond the local place of worship and we expand towards community building, a vision of community building that goes beyond just our immediate concerns and especially our immediate religious concerns. This is important for us as a community, that we build, that we contribute to building society, to building community. And there are many areas in which we can work on, brothers and sisters. I'll just present for you some ideas, some things to think about. And this is all food for thought, dear sisters and brothers. This is all for us to think about and to ponder about. So some ideas. Where is it that we can work on building community? One area is in education and providing support for educational initiatives and for students. We have students in our community. They go to school, right? An important aspect of their education is that they have a support network, that they are able to be tutored, right? Some people, for instance, some students in certain subjects, they have more difficulty than other subjects. Right? I remember in my childhood, I had difficulty with math. I hated math. I still hate math. Right? I remember requiring extra work. I required extra work to help me with math. That's why I went into the humanities, as far away as possible from mathematics. Math is important. I have some people, specialists in math, who are giving me bad looks now. Math is important, right? But this is one topic, this is one subject, and everyone's different. It requires support. And so we find that students require tutoring. They need to be tutored in some cases. Another important aspect of this is after-school programming. The society that we live in now is one that not only focuses on the importance of education, but on what is known as extracurricular activities. All parents know this, right? Are your students involved in extracurricular activities or not? This is important for us. Can we provide after-school services for students? Tutoring services for students to help them when it comes to preparing our students, our youth, to go on to college and to university. Many parents who have students at that level, or you know, their students have gone on to university or college, they know the importance of preparing for college. Not just doing well in school, but the extra steps that are necessary in order to be competitive and in order to prepare yourself for college and university. These are all important. And so part of community building is that we work on developing organizations, systems of support to help students, to promote education, to give students a boost. This is important. And especially within the Islamic tradition that focuses so much on pursuing knowledge and education. This is an important area that we can work on in building community. Another area is marriage. And there are many things that we can discuss regarding community building and how it relates to marriage and marriage services and counseling. And inshallah, in the upcoming nights, I'll dedicate specifically one night to discussing some of these things. This is another area, marriage. Another area that's important is mentoring. This is kind of related in a way to education, to identity building. Youth mentoring. There are many programs out there that help youth in developing their identities and strengthening their identities. Brothers and sisters, it's a difficult world out there. It's a very difficult world. When our young, they go to school and they're in the outside world, they face many different challenges. And sometimes as parents, we may be unaware of many of the challenges that our young face. They may not even tell us about them as parents. But there are many challenges. And in order to overcome these challenges, we have to be able to have and help develop a strong identity, a strong personality. This is very important. And one of the best ways to do so is through mentoring programs. Through programs where within the community, those who are trustworthy, those who have experience, that they can help mentor the youth. They can help guide them. They can be a good resource and a role model for them. And there are other programs out there, but this is very important. Sometimes what ends up happening is that we see this in the mosque, that children are brought at a young age, and they're educated in the weekend school, right? And they're taught all of the basics, but then there comes a time where suddenly they vanish. They don't appear at the mosque anymore. They don't attend for a period of time. And sometimes this is due to the insufficiency of the mosque in providing a place for them so they can develop their identity. They're dealing with all sorts of challenges that make it more difficult for them to hold on to their Islamic identity and their values. And then some of them, if they're lucky, they realize later on. They realize what they've been missing out, what's important for them. It's important for us that we work towards community building. There are many areas that we can talk about, brothers and sisters. Of course, we also have to be realistic. We know that as a Muslim community, and as followers of the school of Ahlul Bayt, especially that we are a minority. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Ahlan wa sahlan wa nana, tafadhal, sharaftu. Ahlan wa sahlan bikum, hayyakum Allah. Sallu ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. We know that as a Muslim community and as followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, that we are a minority in this place that we live in our home. We're a minority faced with a great majority. And that for some, not all Muslims, but for some of them, that we are relatively new to this land and to this place. And so we may not yet have developed the stronger roots that other religious communities may have developed in relation to us. And so some of this means that in some areas of our activism, of our lives, of our society, we're still in the infancy stage. And we can't expect to start running. You have to learn to start walking. You crawl, and then you walk, and then you begin to run. We're not born with the ability to begin running immediately. But being new and being a minority should not preclude us from moving beyond local and immediate thinking and thinking in the long term. We have to think not just about ourselves and our communities, but our children and our grandchildren and the generations that come later. And if we don't plan and if we don't build, then there are many challenges that the next generations will face. And so we have to be able to think long term and to think for the future. And brothers and sisters, our community, we don't have excuses. Why? Because our communities, they have lots of talents. We have a lot of hidden talents in our communities. You know, fortunately, sometimes, just by virtue of our lives, right? Alhamdulillah that we have a place of worship. We have a masjid. We have an Islamic center. We have many such venues in our communities. But just by fact of the practical nature of our lives, where we're running from one place to another, from morning until night, we're always on the go. We're running. That even when we come to the mosque, we don't have too much time to spend with one another. We want to come here, we exchange salams, you know, we catch up a little bit, and then everyone has to go home because tomorrow we have school, we have work, and we're running around. So we don't necessarily get to know one another very well. This is a problem. I admit this is a problem. It must be acknowledged. But that does not mean that we should not get to know one another. There are some within our community who have excellent talents. They have beautiful talents. And it is for us as Muslims, as individuals, as a community, to work on developing these talents, to use the talents that God has blessed us with in the service of our Creator and in the service of our community. So we have no excuses. So number one is organization building. Number two, the element of what I call Husseini activism today is the media and entertainment. Brothers and sisters, the entertainment industry is hugely influential in the society that we live in. Most, if not all of us, we watch TV shows and we watch movies, right? Even when we don't have time. We're busy, we've had a long day at work or school. When we come home at night, what do most people do? They watch TV. They are geared towards entertainment. They watch TV shows, they watch movies. Even if you don't have cable, this is why lots of these new products and streaming services, Netflix, Hulu, Disney is coming out, Apple, all of these are on the rise. I read recently that Netflix has now 150 million subscribers. That's a large number, right? And many people, they spend lots of time watching TV shows and movies. And so the entertainment industry is hugely influential. This is why most of us, if you were to ask them certain things about, you know, biology or physics or geography or what, we may not be able to answer, but ask people about TV shows, actors, actresses, the entertainment industry, and they'll start dropping names left and right. We know it. And part of the entertainment industry is the sports industry and so on and so forth. It's hugely influential, incredibly influential, and it is one of the most effective mediums for propagating awareness, either good or bad. The knowledge and the awareness that is propagated could either be good or bad, but it is one of the most effective tools. And this is why we find that those communities that took advantage of the entertainment industry and of media, and they were able to contribute, that we find that most of those communities now, they're accepted completely as mainstream within society. How? Because people saw them on TV. Because people watched them on TV shows and in movies. And they got used to seeing them and identifying and understanding them. And so they became mainstream. So the question is, how can we contribute to the entertainment industry? How can we contribute to media? There are many existing media outlets that are promoting the teachings of Islam and the school of Ahlul Bayt in the English language and in other languages around the world. Some are doing excellent work. It's part of our responsibility to contribute, to support these media outlets. For instance, we have a channel that most of us probably know, if not all of us, is Ahlul Bayt TV. It's an English channel that promotes the teachings of Islam and the Ahlul Bayt, an excellent channel. For 10 years it's been doing a remarkable job. Many of us have watched the shows. Many of us have watched the impressive documentaries that have come out. This is one example. I'm just giving an example. It's not restricted to this. This is an example that we encourage and that we support existing media outlets, and that we move beyond to work on others, to be creative in the ways that we can present Islam and the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, to the public. Different ways, creative ways. In some cities, probably you've probably heard of this or seen this, some examples, that in some cities there are banners that are placed in the cities, in the main streets of the cities, or in major places. Recently, I saw photos of Times Square, New York City, one of the most important places. There were banners on the TV screens promoting Ashura, promoting Imam Hussein. This is excellent. This is an excellent initiative. There are many who have worked to promote some teachings of Islam on, you know, the banners. How many people drive on the freeways here in Los Angeles? Back and forth on the 405, on the major freeways. How many cars pass by daily? How many advertisements do we have on the side? Imagine if there is an advertisement that gives a simple presentation and then leads people to go and to learn more. This is effective, brothers and sisters. How many people will see this? And so this is one idea, and there are many other ideas. We have to be able to take advantage of the latest forms of media. Many people now on the go, no longer do they have time to listen to long speeches, long lectures. Right, people, you're forced here. You're here at the masjid, you'll listen to me. I'll speak for 45 minutes, 1 hour, you'll listen to me. But on your own terms, you probably won't. You don't have the time. You want sound bites. You're on your way from place to place, and most people don't have the patience to listen to long lectures anymore. And so it's important for us to think about how we can provide content that is suitable, that can be consumed, whether it's through podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time. Why? Because I spend several hours on the freeway, like many of you, every day. You listen to podcasts or short animated videos on YouTube and other platforms that give brief messages, that provide content that is important. That we encourage our young brothers and sisters to go into media, to pursue media studies, to pursue journalism, to go out and to work in those fields. Because why? Because representation matters. It matters. This is why we see there are some examples of prominent Muslim journalists, right? Some of them who are Shia, who belong to the school of Ahlul Bayt, who are making a huge difference. I'll give you the example of Mahdi Hassan. Right? Mahdi Hassan is making a huge difference in his journalism. What a brilliant figure he is. MashaAllah. But this is one example, because representation matters, brothers and sisters. We have to be able to tell our own story. And so let's encourage. Now some people, they might say, well, Sayyid, we have practical concerns. You go into journalism, there is not so much money. We want to go and become physicians and lawyers and engineers so that we can take care of ourselves and our families. That's where the real money is. This is why I go back to the idea of organization building, brothers and sisters. That we provide a support network. When there is support for these causes, then no longer will the main and the most important element on the minds of people, their objective is to make money. Because there's a support network there. One that is helpful. One that supports them. This is number two. Number three, brothers and sisters, is in academia and scholarship. I've mentioned this before. If we look at Western academia in particular, we find that there is a large void. There is largely missing from Western academia is the study of Islam, and in particular, the study of Shiism in the school of Ahlul Bayt. It's largely missing, despite the advances in recent decades. There are many, and this is a field that I'm involved in myself. There are many who are, you know, studying Islam, they're teaching Islam in Western universities, in the United States, in North America in general, in Europe and other places. And there have been many advancements, even in the study of Shi'ism. Just last week, I was in Princeton for a one-week seminar. And we were about 12 people. Everyone there was focused on Shi'ism, not just on the study of Shi'ism, but on the study of a part of Shi'ism, which is Shi'i legal theory, usul al-fiqh. That's their expertise. 12 people, that's a big number. Right? I was very excited. I was happy to participate with them. So it's on the rise, but in large parts, the study of Islam and the study of Shi'ism and the school of Ahlul Bayt is still largely missing, brothers and sisters, from Western academia. This is hugely influential. This is a field that we not often we don't think about the influence of academia, outside of academia. But I'll give you an example as to how influential this is. Again, I speak from things that I've been seeing and experiencing myself. So, I teach a course on Islam. It's called Introduction to Islam. This is in the daytime. And we just started recently in the semester. This is at USC. Okay? And in previous years versus now, today, I've noticed sort of a change. For those who are students, you'll know that when the semester begins, when it first starts and you're starting a new class, usually the professor will do, put certain time or place in order for people to introduce themselves. You go around the room and you introduce yourselves. Everyone says their name, their major, their year, why they're taking the course, right? A lot of professors are interested in why they're taking the course. I remember long ago, not too long ago, but long ago when I was doing my undergraduate studies, and I would take the courses, I would hear all sorts of things. And probably some of you guys have, you know, students, hear all sorts of reasons why people are taking courses. Sometimes, and this would happen frequently and often, they would say, you know what, this is the best time for my schedule. I'd had, you know, I had a gap that I needed to fill, and so this class works well for my schedule. Some of them because it's a general education requirement. And for other reasons, showing that the students, some, at least some students, were not necessarily interested in the topic per se, but for other reasons, for expediency. But now, when you look at courses such as Introduction to Islam, and we just had a course, and in the course there are 100 students, males and females, all of them, without exception, and it's a general education course, that means that you have students from the various departments and from the various disciplines attending. They're not all in religious studies. In fact, a minority, most of them are coming from, you know, the various disciplines, right? Each and every one of them, without exception, when he or she suggested or said why they're taking the course, they said that they were doing so out of a genuine interest in Islam. They want to know what's going on. What is Islam? What is this religion that we've been talking about, that we've been hearing about in the news? Remember, most of these students are still early in their undergraduate careers, 18, 19 years old, right? And so being 18 years old or 19 years old means you were born when? If you're 18, you were born in 2000 or 2001. What happened in 2001? 9/11. 9/11. And so many of the students, they were either born, some of them were not even yet born. They were either born in that year or immediately following 9/11. So they have no recollection, they have no memory. It's kind of shocking for me, right? It's one of those things that, you know, I remember, and many of you, most of you probably, remember so clearly. But the young generation now, those who are in undergraduate, they don't remember this. All they know about September 11th is what they have heard of, what they have seen on TV and in the news. And we know what happened and the way that the spotlight was placed on Islam after September 11th. And the negativity and the stereotypes and the misconceptions. So this has done what for students? It has raised their interests. They want to figure out what is this religious tradition that they hear about. Who are Muslims? What do they believe in? What do they do? So there is a genuine interest in studying Islam. They're paying attention for the most part. There are some slackers. But for the most part, they're paying attention in class. They're listening. They're reading. So it's extremely important that in this day and age, that we have those who are competent, those who go into academia, those who go into scholarship, so that they can present Islam, they can teach about Islam in a way that is suitable. It's very important. Brothers and sisters, this is an opportunity for us, a time that we have to take advantage. If we move beyond academia, and we come even to our mosques, how many mosques, how many Islamic centers do we have across the nation, across the country, just here in the United States? We have thousands. How many of them actually have a scholar who resides, who is present, or someone who is competent enough in the Islamic tradition, who resides with the community and who is able to teach full time? How many? I don't know, but it's a small minority, brothers and sisters. Probably not more than 5%. If we're lucky. That's probably being generous. So there's a lack. There's a void there. And that void needs to be filled. Voids don't like to remain. Voids are always filled. So we either fill the void with people, men and women who are competent enough, who are trained, who are experts, who can teach, or the void will be filled by others. by other sources, by other resources. And so it's important for us, brothers and sisters, that we encourage one another, and especially our youth, we encourage them to turn towards scholarship. That they go and they pursue both a traditional, what we call Hawza studies, traditional studies, as well as an academic pursuit of Islam in particular, and of Shiism in particular, so that they're able to provide answers to today's questions. They're able to teach. They're able to guide. This is highly important, brothers and sisters. This is an area that we need to work on. Besides supporting continuing institutions or establishing institutions here in the West that can teach, that can educate, and encouraging our young and old to go and to learn. And there are many opportunities, brothers and sisters. There's a lot of work that, there's a lot of room for work for establishing research institutes, establishing programs, professorships, publications. This is all very important. And there is a great need. This is number three and number four. Finally, the fourth element of Husseini activism today is that of public service. Serving not just ourselves, not just the followers of Ahlul Bayt, not just Muslims, but going beyond. Serving others, serving the public, serving society at large. In the areas of healthcare, in the areas of education, in the areas of aid and assistance, in the areas of development work, in the various sectors of public service. To think locally and internationally, to provide public services that help our communities locally, but also nationally and internationally, brothers and sisters. And there are many organizations out there. There are some organizations that work on an international scale. An organization such as, for instance, and I give these examples so that we can think about them, and we can think about how we can support these institutions and what we can do to contribute to more of these organizations and institutions coming out. One example is that of Zaman International. Some of you may have heard of this name. Zaman International is an aid organization. It's a non-profit aid organization that was established by one of our respected sisters in Dearborn, Michigan. And its objective is to provide aid for those who are in need. It does not differentiate based on religion, based on class, based on race, based on gender. No differentiation. Its purpose is to provide aid and assistance to those who are in need. Go and check out their website. Look at the beautiful, the remarkable work that they're doing. Other organizations such as Development and Relief Foundation, some of you may be aware of some of the work, especially that's done in Iraq and other places. When we come to smaller organizations, but which are doing great work, I mentioned the other night, Who is Hussein, which has opened chapters in various parts of the world, and they're doing excellent work. These are fantastic organizations. When we come locally, the last, but certainly not least, the example, just yesterday, I saw a short video of an initiative called the Ahlul Bayt Initiative, an organization that has been developed and established by our very own community members, those sitting with us here today, young and old. It's called the Ahlul Bayt Initiative. And the video, in short, was showing some of the work they're doing to help with the problem of homelessness. Homelessness is a severe problem in our communities, brothers and sisters, in our society. And so they spent some time offering pizza, I think it was, and other meals, not to just to feed, but to get to know these individuals, to speak with them, to spend some time with them, to see what are their concerns, what are their needs, how we can help This is hugely influential, brothers and sisters. Sometimes these projects, they don't make headlines. You don't hear about them on the news. Rarely. They don't make headlines. But they have a huge impact in the lives, in the hearts, and the minds of those who we help and we assist. These are important projects, brothers and sisters. And these are projects that as a community we have to support completely. And inshallah, we'll have the chance in the upcoming nights to hear more about these projects. We'll have our community members present them so we can hear about them and we can see how we can support these initiatives, what we can do to help. Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions, his ashab, his followers, his loyal and devout followers, they were not satisfied with the status quo. They were not happy with remaining silent and seeing injustice and oppression and indecency, immorality and evil extend in society. They were not satisfied with the status quo. And so they expended everything that they had, their resources, their time, their efforts, their entire lives, their whole lives, they gave so that they can do what is necessary to promote positive change, to change the situation, to fix what was wrong, to reform society. Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions and his family members, they present for us the values and the principles of what it means to be active in society, an active member of society, promoting that which is good. And so the question that we have to ask us, ourselves, oftentimes, it's traditional that when we salute Imam Hussein and his family and companions, what do we say? We say, Ya laytana kunna ma'akum sadati. Oh, how we wish we were with you, oh our masters. Fanafuza fawzan azima. Why? Because if we were with you, then we would be victorious. We would have achieved victory. We have to ask ourselves. We're not with Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein lived 1,400 years ago. The battle of Karbala and Ashura took place 1,400 years ago. 1,400 years later, here we are. We are standing, we are sitting in this time, in this place. What does it mean for me to say, oh Imam Hussein, I wish I was amongst your companions. I wish I was with you and that I would have been successful and victorious. What does that mean? On the day of judgment, when we all stand before God and we are faced with Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we are faced with the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Do we have an answer? The Prophet will say, you repeated, Hadi, you repeated on and on and on. You said, Ya laytani kuntu ma'akum. I wish I was with you. I wish I was with Hussein. Amir al-Mu'mineen will ask me this question. Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam, she will ask me this question. The Imam himself, Imam Hussein, he will ask me this question. That, what would you have done? How would you have contributed? You were not with us at that time, but in your time and in your place and in your context, what did you do? Were you a Husseini? Did you do something about it? Did you do something to improve your society and your community in the name of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? And so at that time, it is where we stand before Imam Hussein and we say, oh Mawlai, my master. My master, maybe I was not with you on the day of Ashura, but I did the little that I did. I brought comfort to someone who was broken. I helped someone who was in need. I taught someone about you and about your objectives. I listened to someone. I supported someone. I did the little that I did, but I did it in your name. And I did it to promote your name and your values and your mission. And so we ask ourselves, what are we doing? How can we be Husseini activists? How can we be like the companions of Imam Hussein, who the Imam says, there were no better companions than my companions. The companions of Imam Hussein were the best of companions. Look at the night of Ashura, the eve of Ashura, the night before Ashura. The traditions, they tell us that the camp of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it largely remained awake that night, throughout the night. That those in the camp, they were engaged in reflection. They were engaged in prayer, in seeking forgiveness. They were engaged in thought. Some traditions, they tell us that Imam Hussein, he approaches his companions on the eve of Ashura. And he looks at his companions. They are all gathered. They are all there. And they all know what is going to happen. This was not a surprise for them. They had already been prohibited from the water for a couple of days. The army of Yazid had surrounded them. Umar ibn Sa'd, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd had surrounded them in the thousands and thousands. They knew what was happening. It did not come to them as a surprise. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he wants to show us a lesson, you and me, who will come later on, and we will reflect and we will think about those events. He turns to his companions and he tells his companions, oh my companions, this army has come for me. I am their object. They have come for me. And I want to give you the time now, the chance now, for you to leave. They're not after you, they're after me. For you to go back. Go back to your families, go back to your children. You are free, I give you permission, and I will not hold you accountable for you to leave. The traditions, they tell us that not one of them moved. They all remained in their place. They all stayed in their place. And they turned to him, they told him, Ya Mawlai, O our master, O our dear Hussein, how is it, in our conscience, in good conscience, how can we turn our backs against you? We came with you the whole time, all the way until here. We were with you. We did not betray you. How is it that now, during these final moments, we would leave you and we would betray you? By Allah, we will not do this. We are with you to the end. And what will life be? Suppose that we continue to live after you. Suppose that we went to our families and our children and to our businesses. What will life be after you, O Aba Abdullah? What kind of life will this be? This will be a dark life, a life not worthy of living and pursuing. And so they remain loyal to Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And then the day of Ashura comes. And one by one they show their loyalty and their bravery, their courage. On the morning of Ashura, Umar ibn Sa'd, he attacks the camp of Imam Hussein. We are told with many arrows. Many of them, they strike the companions first. The companions, they place themselves at the forefront to guard the grandson of Rasulullah, to guard the woman and the children. They did not allow themselves to be in the back or in any other position. They placed themselves in the front. because they knew that the sooner that they sacrificed, the sooner that they went forth, the sooner they would meet with Rasulullah. The sooner that they would turn and they would stand tall and proud before Rasulullah, before Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam, showing their sacrifice. So they stood. The traditions, they tell us that the arrows, many of them, they hit the companions, and in large numbers they fell. That they were hit and they were hurt through the arrows, and many of them died. But what kind of companions were they? We are told the story of one companion by the name of Al-Hur Al-Riyahi. What do we say about someone like Al-Hur? Al-Hur, who we all know, he was the leader of the specific retinue, the army, that diverted Imam Hussein from Kufa to Karbala. He was the leader, the commander of that army. We are told that as they are preparing for battle, they see a figure coming from the enemy side approaching the tent of Imam Hussein. Al-Abbas alayhi salam, he goes out to see who is this. He asks him to identify himself. He identifies himself. He tells him, what is it that you want? He tells him, I want to meet Al-Hussein alayhi salam. I want to speak with him. I have something to tell him. So Al-Abbas, he informs Abi Abdullah, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he comes out and he asks him, oh man, who are you? He tells him, my master, I am Hur. I am the one who brought you to this land. I am the one who brought you here. It is because of my actions. The Imam tells him, what is it that you want? He tells him, my dear Imam, I am here to be the first one to fight alongside you. I saw myself between heaven and hell, between the hellfire and between the paradise, and by Allah, I will never choose the hellfire over paradise. And so he seeks forgiveness from Imam Hussein. He tells him, my dear Hussein, forgive me for my actions. And in order to make up for some of my actions, I want to be the first one to go out. The traditions, they tell us that Al-Hur, he goes out and he fights so courageously until he is struck, he falls, and he calls out, he salutes Imam Hussein, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Imam Hussein, he comes rushing to Al-Hur. He comes rushing to him. He takes him, he places his head in his lap. He begins to remove the dust, and he begins to remove the blood, and he tells him, oh Hur, may Allah bless you. May Allah bless your mother for naming you Al-Hur. You are truly free in this life and in the hereafter. The traditions, they tell us that one by one, the companions, they go out fighting valiantly for Imam Hussein. One by the name of Wahab, we are told that he and his family had just converted to Islam. They were previously Christians. They had converted to Islam. That they come out. Wahab comes to Imam Hussein. He tells him, oh my master, give me permission to go out and to fight. The tradition tells us that the wife of Wahab, they were also newlyweds, they were newly married, that the wife of Wahab, she comes out and she tells him, my dear Wahab, please don't go out. Please, it's very difficult for me to lose you. I cannot bear losing you. Please do not go out. Wahab's mother, she comes out and she tells him, oh my dear Wahab, do not listen. Do not allow anything to come between you and the protection of the grandson of Rasulullah. Go out and fight. Wahab goes out and he fights until he is injured, until he is bleeding. He comes back to his mother. He says, oh my mother, are you satisfied with me? She tells him, oh Wahab, I will not be satisfied until I see you have sacrificed yourself for Imam Hussein. he goes out and he begins to fight once again so courageously. Suddenly, as he is fighting, he notices he is fighting. He, in fact, gets struck and he falls. And he notices that his wife is coming out and she is calling him. She is telling him, "Oh Wahab, continue to fight for Rasulullah. Continue to fight for Aba Abdullah." He turns to her. He says, "Oh my wife, it was only moments ago that you were prohibiting me. You were telling me not to go out. What is it that changed your mind? Why are you encouraging me now?" She tells him, "Oh Wahab, do not blame me. I heard the cries of the women and children. I heard the cry of Imam Hussein saying, 'Ala hal min nasirin yansuruna. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un.'" وسيعلم الذين ظلموا آل محمد أي منقلب ينقلبون والعاقبة للمتقين. صلى الله وسلم عليك يا سيدي ويا مولاي يا أبا عبد الله. صلى الله وسلم عليك وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت، وبقي الليل والنهار، ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. All together, brothers and sisters. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته، وإلى أرواح المؤمنين والمؤمنات نهدي جميعا ثواب سورة الفاتحة مع الصلوات.